Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sure.
Poutine.
Canada, huh? Almost made it.
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, Rabbit?
Fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
I've been at the wrong place at the wrong time, chasing all the wrong things most of my life, and every kind of loss that you can't find. But I got one thing right. Been the kind of guy girls' mamas don't like, running with the wrong crowd on the wrong nights, cause I've been wrong about a million times. But I got one thing right.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have everybody with us tonight, because it's going to be a fun interview, fun guest with us here tonight. He's done a lot in his short time and certainly got a lot more history to write in terms of where he's going. But before we do that, let's bring in Jenna. Jenna, how are you? How's everything going?
It's going, getting ready to head back to Edmonton. So
yeah.
Came a little bit quicker than I thought it would, but other than that, just same old.
We'll have to talk a little bit about that next week and figure out everything at that point. But before we do that, let's get to our guest tonight, because we got a lot to go over, and we certainly want to squeeze in as much as we can in from his career. So tonight, folks, Jen and I are proud to welcome a man who, despite his young age, has seen and done quite a bit in his time thus far. He is legitimately one of the best head coaches in ACHA history based on his record and his team's accomplishments. He played for the school where he now coaches, and he's also employed there in another capacity. Outside of seemingly living at the campus, he was a goaltender growing up that saw him suit up for the Eastman Selects, the Bantam Winnipeg Monarchs, and Dakota College at Botno, among some of his stops. He's been nominated and won a few illustrious awards in his four seasons as head coach of the Minot State University Beavers women's hockey program. And The Hockey Show is proud, honored, privileged, humbled, and pleased to welcome Mr. Ryan Miner to the show. Ryan, how are you? How's everything going?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I mean, we are excited to talk to you. We know how good your program is, and I mean, just getting a chance to sit down with you and go over some of the stuff is going to be good. I got to ask you, though, how's summer going down in Minot, North Dakota right now for you?
You know what? It's been a good summer. Obviously, U.S., Canada, a little different in terms of regulations and whatnot.
Yeah.
We've been pretty much open since before Christmas, so it's kind of been a normal summer, thankfully, and getting ready for the season, golfing quite a bit, and just enjoying time, you know, away from the rink. But now we're hitting August here and kind of getting back into the grind, so...
Right on. That's usually the time when you start getting that itch again to get back and start playing again, eh?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's nice to have a few months off, but when August rolls around and, you know, you're 2-3 weeks out from classes start, and, you know, you start to get excited and you start spending more time at the rink and doing everything you can to make sure you're prepared for when the players get here, so...
We usually start at the beginning of everyone's story when meeting them, so we're going to go back to March 14th, 1995, when a wee baby boy came home to the Miner household in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. What was life like for young Ryan, and when did you guys move to Winnipeg?
My parents were both RCMP officers, retired now, so I was born in Saskatoon. My my mom was posted in Rostron, Saskatchewan. For a few years, but I think by the time I was 2 or 3 years old, we moved to the Winnipeg area. So throughout my life, I've kind of lived within and around Winnipeg. I know we spent some time in Portage, we spent some time in Oak Bank, spent some time in Headingley, and then finally, I think when I was 13, we made the move into the city. So growing up, I was kind of bouncing around, but never too far away from, you know, where I started, so always within kind of that hour or two from Winnipeg. So throughout, you know, my young age, I played for whatever kind of the local team was there, and then when I moved to the city, that's kind of when I started to get into AA and AAA as I got older, so.
We've had other coaches on this program, Ryan, and certainly, you know, no surprise that they always say they look for athletes more than hockey players, you know, kids that play, you know, multiple sports and certainly can do a lot of stuff when building their teams. Did you play other sports outside of hockey? Were you, you know, an athlete all around when it came to playing other sports as well?
Yeah, so, I mean, I dabbled in soccer a bit at a young age. Did a bit of baseball. I think when I turned 13, 14, I had that mentality that I wanted to go as far as I could playing hockey. So I kind of just dropped everything and put my focus just on the one sport. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a good thing to see athletes play multiple sports. I mean, back in the day, hockey used to be 24/7 for me, and people said, you're going to burn yourself out. And, they weren't wrong. So it's nice to see people take a break from the winter season and enjoy doing other things in the summer, spring. And, it really helps out. You're able to maintain that cardio and enjoy other aspects of life other than just being at the hockey rink. So.
So obviously, we talk a lot on the show about sometimes goalies are their own little breed, but most kids get the pads thrown at them and, are told to try playing net at some age in their careers. What age were you convinced that goaltending was your position on the ice?
So I believe I was 6 years old, and the funny thing was I started as a player, and my parents always told me I was too nice. So we'd be playing in a practice or a game and another kid would fall, and instead of staying with the play, I'd skate over to them and ask them if they were okay. So at that point, my dad was like, we're going to put you in net so you can't do that. And I remember the first time they put goalie pads on me, that my mom wanted to take a picture after practice and the Zamboni was coming out. So the picture is literally of me just bawling my eyes out. But I was in goalie pads, and from then on, I stuck with it and continued to grow and, got through college, and now I'm where I am at. So.
We'll get to all that in a second because there's a lot to go over in terms of that. But we'll start at the bantam age because that's where you sort of started making your mark on the world in terms of being a goaltender. What do you remember from playing with the Winnipeg Monarchs from your time in net alongside tandem partner Tyler Dodd? Because really, that's when things started blowing up for you.
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to even play for the Monarchs. We actually lived in the Winnipeg Warriors area. And so, unfortunately, I got cut from that team, and, it worked out for the best. And so when I got picked up by the Monarchs, that was a team that was full of studs. I mean, there's guys that are still playing in the NHL, played NCAA Division I. We were a powerhouse team. I don't remember if it was my first year or second year, but I think we went the entire season with maybe one loss all year. Guys like Madison Bowie, Paul Stoyakovich, Kirk Keats, all those guys had really good careers. So you talk about good goaltending, but you also see at times when you have a strong team in front of you, sometimes goaltending doesn't matter. And not to chirp myself, but I definitely wasn't the top player on that team, and I was just fortunate enough to have a strong team in front of me and be able to play. And we actually, I believe my second year of Monarchs, we went to the Western Championships, and we were, I think, the last Manitoba team to win it. I believe that they don't even do Westerns anymore.
Yeah, no.
We were the last team to win the Western Championships from Manitoba. So that was a great experience. That was a great feeling. It was nice winning consistently and being on a top team and having that recognition. So I think that kind of really helped me out as a goaltender and made a lot of good friendships. And again, like I said, that team was so strong. There's still guys, if you look at that roster, that are playing professional, playing NCAA and whatnot. So,
you obviously just mentioned, you guys went to the Western Canadian Championship there. What do you recall the most about that tournament? We have a lot of moments we're going to go over right away, but is there anything that stands out specifically about that tournament?
I think it was out in BC. Being out in that area of the country is beautiful. Being able to see the water, see the mountains, that type of thing. So, obviously you're there for business, but it's nice when you travel somewhere and you are excited to be in a place that you've never been before. Like at that time, I'd never been out there before. And knowing that being the top team from Manitoba, competing against the rest of the top teams from Western Canada and just having an opportunity. And I knew we were a good team, but obviously at that age, it's hard to judge how the caliber is within each province. And, just knowing that we were going to see the best hockey players and the best teams in Western Canada compete was just something to be excited for. So,
Yeah, we got a lot to go over in terms of this tournament. We're just going to mention some names that people are going to probably recognize quite well. I don't know if you remember any of these players or not that you played against here, Ryan, but some of these names are quite famous now. Game one, saw you guys meet up with Burnaby. They had a goalie who will represent her team in the Olympics this year as the Monarchs beat Kimberly Newell and some kid named Matthew Barzell by a 4-2 score. You didn't play. Obviously, you know, some big names there that turned into big names. But what's the emotion level like for you guys after winning that first game and going, you know what, we belong here. We can do this.
Yeah, I mean, this goes way back, but I think Burnaby was honestly the team to beat in that tournament, you know, so getting that first win out of the way and against a very strong team, and obviously, like the names you mentioned, you have no idea how far they're going to go at that point, but, you know, players like that stood out, and just that first win is always the most important, you know, it gets rid of the jitters. You know, you feel a little more comfortable going into the next games, and then you have that confidence, that winning mentality. But at the same time, you know, we went in after that first game knowing that, hey, we just beat one of the best teams in the tournament. We're going to kind of be the team to beat now. So it did put a little added pressure on, but at the same time, you know, it's always a good feeling to win against the team that was pretty much, I believe they were hosting. So they were hosting. So beating the host team is definitely made a statement in that first game. So
game two, get the start against Saskatoon Frostbite. You play well, you stop 17 shots in a 6-2 victory for the Monarchs. I mean, like you said, it's kind of going way back, but do you recall anything specifically from that game, or would you recall just standing in the blue paint from that game?
Honestly, you know, nerves, you know, as a goalie in a championship setting, you just want to make sure that you don't let your team down. And as much as it's a team sport, I always felt like the goalie had the most pressure because, you know, you let a goal in, everyone sees if a forward defenseman makes a bad play or has a turnover, you know, it's not as noticed as much as when a goal goes in. So, you know, just trying to keep my composure and play for my teammates and play with them. And they were strong in front of me. So just, you know, kind of getting through those first 5-10 minutes of the game, just seeing that first shot, making sure that feeling comfortable in the net and making sure that my teammates in front of me, you know, had confidence in me, trusted me that I was going to do my job and they were going to do theirs. So
game three, bit of a back to, I guess, BC and certainly playing another BC team. Tyler Dodd got the start against Nick Petan and the North Shore Winter Club. You guys played well. You guys controlled the pace. You earned a 3-2 victory over them, which assured you a spot in the final based on wins and losses. How much excitement is there knowing that you guys are going to play for a medal for sure and possibly a gold medal if you keep playing well?
Yeah, no, obviously we went 3-0 in that round robin, and it was a good feeling, but at the same time, you know, my mentality has always been you enjoy it, especially in tournament time. You know, you enjoy it for 10 minutes and then you start preparing for the next game. I don't think we had knew who we were playing yet at that point, but, you know, happy to win. But at the same time, it was just a matter of figuring out who we had next and who we were going to play. And, you know, we wanted to keep that win streak rolling and keep going. And, you know, at the end of the day, the ultimate goal was winning the championships. So good feeling again. Had I known who those players were at the time, you know, it would be a little more exciting. I mean, obviously, you know, you look at the stats of those teams, you know, Nick Petan, Matt Barzell, you know, all those guys were leading their team in points. So, I mean, looking at a sheet, you know, wow, they're good, but you never know that they're going to go that far at that point. So, but, you know, looking back and seeing against some of the players that I was able to play against was definitely exciting. And, you know, I mean, it's not much for me, but it's just, hey, I played against this guy. I played with this guy. So it's still a good feeling.
Game four, we're going to move on to the Monarchs round into a mini all-star team. Braden Point had 2 goals and Morgan Klimchuk had 2 goals and an assist in a 7-2 drubbing at the hands of the also undefeated Calgary Bisons. Tyler Dodd was the goalie of record in that game, but is there kind of a letdown after, you know, the loss of having played so well in the previous 3 games?
You know, I think at that point we, you know, you want to win every game, but I think at that point we knew we were making our way to the championship. And sometimes a loss can definitely give you some perspective and some adversity. You know, it's never a good feeling, but at the same time, you can only do so much in a game and you move on and prepare for the next one. So,
well, next one was the gold medal final because your 3-1 record against Calgary's 4-0 record put you guys back into the final as in a rematch of that last round robin game. Bisons would be that opponent. The 7-2 loss, though, was a thing of the past that had no bearing apparently on this game because you guys scored the 4-3 overtime victory in that gold medal game. Corey Haverstick actually scored the overtime golden goal. Walk us through the last few moments there when, you know, seeing Corey score and the excitement after the game.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it goes into overtime and you get nervous and, you know, it's next goal win mentality. And, you know, I was on the bench that game, but at the same time, you see that puck go in the net and, you know, it goes quiet for half a second and then it just gets loud and it almost hits you and you're like, holy cow, like game's over. We just won the Western Championships. And, you know, that feeling of tossing off your helmet, tossing off your gloves and skating over to celebrate with your teammates is the best feeling. And, you know, just like when you watch the Stanley Cup, obviously it's not as prestigious, but I think winning any championship and celebrating with your team is an amazing feeling. So, and the best part, I think, for looking back at that was the pictures because we had all dyed our hair blonde. I don't know whose decision that was, but having black hair, you know, I think it took like, I don't know how many things of dye to get my hair bleached blonde, but the pictures after hugging, you know, accepting awards, just the faces. But at the same time, you see everyone with the blonde hair and you just have to laugh about it. So, but going back to it, you know, I kind of got off track, just amazing feeling, you know, obviously as a goaltender, there's only two spots. Would have loved to have played in that game, but at the same time, you know, me and my partner were best friends, you know, at the time. And, you know, you have confidence in each other and you trust that if one's not in the net, the other is going to step up. And Tyler did that day. And at the end of the day, it's a team game and we were able to celebrate as a team and come home champions. So.
That's awesome. Good story about the blonde hair as well. That's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, the blonde hair is hilarious. I feel like even nowadays you see all the, like, hockey guys, even girls that are doing that in playoffs or tournaments. It's so funny to think about because I remember we used to do that too, but we did bright red for Vicks, which was not as cool as the blonde.
It's I think the hardest part with that is deciding whether you're going to shave it off or grow it out because, I mean, by the time I let it grow out for a couple weeks and then you cut it a bit, then it was frosted tips and that looked even worse. So it got to the point where I was looking like someone from NSYNC and I was like, I just got to shave it off.
So things are on the up and up for you as you were ranked the number 2 goalie coming out of Bantam Hockey. As for the final draft rankings for the WHL Bantam Draft, the 29th best prospect overall. Were you drafted by a WHL team at the Bantam Draft?
So I was not. Kind of situation, same situation as some of my friends. I was in a position where I had family who had gone the NCAA route, and I hadn't decided if I wanted to go the WHL route or try and play NCAA. I mean, I didn't even end up doing that, but that was kind of the dream. And so in conversations, you know, with some of these WHL teams, that did come up and I wanted to be honest up front. And so I didn't get drafted, but immediately after the draft, Saskatoon called and said, well, I know you haven't made up your mind yet, but we're going to put you on our protected list and bring you out to camp just in case you do make that decision to play in the WHL. So I was protected by Saskatoon until I made that decision at 18 to go down to the States. And then after that, it was kind of, you know, the WHL was kind of in the background and never really thought about it again. So,
I mean, it's still got to be pretty cool, though, that a team, you know, thinks that highly of you that, hey, we're going to protect you just in case, right? Like, I mean, there aren't many kids that get that opportunity, so.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, there's the draft, you know, as many rounds as there are, and there's still so many hockey players in the country, and being selected, being protected by a team is definitely an honor. And, you know, I was excited about it and, you know, obviously disappointed when I didn't get drafted, but at the same time, my own doing, you know, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do and but, you know, always be upfront and honest. And I, you know, those conversations were, well, I'm kind of don't know which way I'm leaning, but I'm just going to make sure that I take the best route. So
you moved on, you went, you know, from Bantam to play with the Eastman Selects under 18 AAA team in 2011, 2012 on a team that admittedly wasn't very strong. Your stats kind of reflected the team's struggles, but I think it's always important because when kids play on a losing team, like sometimes they reflect on the losses more than what they've actually gained. What did you learn about yourself and maybe the game itself after, you know, that difficult season between the pipes?
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at a team, a last place team in the league that had a couple wins all season, you know, even now recruiting, you still see it. I mean, yes, the goals against average doesn't look great. And just it's tough to see, and obviously as a goalie you don't like looking at your own stat like that, but playing for Eastman, I mean, I was lucky if I saw less than 40-50 shots a game. So the experience that I got playing for that team, you know, constantly getting peppered as a goalie, you know, you don't want to see it, but it happens sometimes. And, you know, that definitely helped me develop as a goalie because, you know, you'd look at, we'd play the Wild and the shots would be 62-10. Well, I'd rather be in the net where I get 62 shots than stand there for 60 minutes and be lucky if I get 10 shots. So, right, yeah. I mean, it wasn't, you know, we didn't win much, you know, we usually got outscored quite a bit. We had a young team, but at the same time, from a goalie's perspective, you know, seeing the shots each game and making sure that, you know, my goal was always to make sure that if I let in a goal, I at least made 9 saves or 10 saves. So I don't know if I got to that mark with Eastman, but that was kind of what I was going for, and that was definitely a developmental year for me in terms of growing my game and getting better. So,
well, clearly, you know, the developmental part of that worked because you got an opportunity to play at hockey at a higher level when you suited up for Dakota College at Bottineau. For most Manitobans, Bottineau isn't a well-known town in North Dakota, so it's about 2 hours south of Brandon. But what was life like in a town of, you know, 2,100 people in Tommy the Turtle?
So yeah, no, I mean, after AAA, just kind of going back just a bit, you know, I kind of bounced around. I was up in Swan Valley for a bit. I was down with the Pembina Valley Twisters. I wasn't playing much. I wasn't really too happy. And so I had to kind of add to your question, like when I was graduating, I had to make the decision of if I was even going to try and pursue to play juniors for another 2 years or just move on with my life. And at that point I knew I wasn't going to be going pro. I wasn't going to be going as far as I hoped as a kid. So that's when I made the decision ultimately at 18 to start college at Bottineau. And so going in there as a fresh 18-year-old, you know, usually most of the time at the college level, they want you playing until you're 20 or until you're finished juniors, 20 years old before you even go to college, especially in the U.S. So I was fortunate enough to go there as an 18-year-old. You know, I had a few different offers. I definitely searched around, but just like I said, going back to it, a lot of coaches in the U.S. at the NCAA level, D3, I knew I was never going D1, but D3 level even then too, weren't taking guys until they were at least 20, 21. So Bottineau was kind of the only option for me as a young 18-year-old. And the nice part about it at the time was they're ACHA now, but when I went, they were actually junior college, so they were able to offer scholarships. So I was fortunate enough to go to Bottineau for 2 years and not pay a cent. And, you know, small town living, it kind of reminded me of Oakbank, Manitoba. I spent, I think, 6 or 7 years in Oakbank, so kind of the same feeling, same mentality of small town. Everyone knows each other, everyone comes and supports you at the rink when you have a game. So Definitely. I think I made the right choice just because I wanted to start my degree. I wanted to graduate at the age of, 22 or 21, 22 and be able to continue with my career. I mean, obviously I ended up staying in Minot, but I wanted to make sure that I didn't wait any longer to start getting my degree and working towards, where I'm at now. But kind of the same situation as Eastman. We had a young team. We had a team that struggled. I was on a team that saw a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And that was kind of for both my years. I mean, we didn't have the best records. I didn't have the best GAA, but, I still saw 40, 50 shots a game. And, it developed me. And I made lasting friendships there with guys that I still talk to. And the sad part was that it was only a two-year school. So eventually I would have to move on. But I think my time there, just with how the community supported us and, interacting with people and kids from the community and even the school itself was 800 students, but I think there was only like 400 on campus and all of them were athletes. So it was, everyone knew each other and it was just that kind of hometown feeling. So I'm definitely happy that I made that decision right out of high school. So
you did mention that things didn't go so well on the ice. I mean, not that it didn't go well on the ice, just that you guys didn't win a lot on the ice with Dakota College. You played, though, in 35 games in those 2 years. Your stats, again, as you just made mention, not the greatest. But there's one stat that really stands out. In 2013-2014, you appeared in 19 games, and you had an 0-1-1 record. Were you just assigned to play third periods, or like how did that work out?
0-1-1 record.
Yeah, according to that's what the school had you down for is 0-1-1 in 19 games.
that must have been the statisticians. So, I'm not sure on that one.
Okay,
I know we didn't win a lot, but that's definitely not accurate. So.
Okay, good. I was gonna say, how are you only the goalie of record in two of those 19 games? That's crazy.
Yeah, no, I was fortunate enough that I actually got to play quite a bit at Botno. I mean, I was the starter there, which was never really an opportunity for me through AAA and even my small stint in Junior B, so being able to go to a school and actually be the starter and play games. So as unsuccessful as we were, it was a positive for me. So
2015-2016, Sneezy transferred down the highway to join the Minot State Beavers, where you earned your degree in accounting. You would only play 10 games, but the numbers were impressive. You had a 1.99 goals against average and a 0.923 save percentage. Obviously, those are significant changes in your stats, but what change prompted the improvement in your overall stats while at Minot State?
Just a better team. I mean, nothing against my teammates and time at Botno, but just a better team in front of me. I mean, they were a division above Botno. These were guys that were coming as 20-year-olds from Junior A in Canada and, around the U.S. And I actually tried to go to Minot as a freshman, and the coach at the time, Wade Regeer, had told me that, no, I was too young and actually suggested that I go to Botno. So after my 2 years, I went there, and I was kind of the same age as all the guys coming in as freshmen. So more experience with that team, a lot of good players that I played with. The biggest thing with Botno and Minot, and I even use it now for recruiting, is we get a lot of top players here from the surrounding states and provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, because one, it's within driving distance of a couple hours, depending on where you're at. And two, the price. I mean, after Botno, I had the opportunity. I had a couple opportunities at the D3, NCAA D3, and ultimately I chose Minot because I would have rather paid $8,000 in comparison to $30,000 somewhere else, So
right.
I made the smart decision and, was happy for it. I didn't see a lot of games. We had three goalies on the team, all of who are still, very close friends of mine. And so we all got along. I just, at the end of the day, I got the short end of the stick and was in and out of the lineup. But when I was in the net, I made sure that I was doing my part. And I think my friends always joke with me because I always make fun of myself that, you know, I barely played and I'm okay with that. But they always joke that I'm the only goalie in Minot State history to go undefeated, even though it was only 10 games. So, but still a good feeling.
That is an impressive stat. That's one that you should hold on to for sure. So
yeah, no, definitely. So.
So, I mean, you graduated from Minot State, you degree in hand. You didn't go far, though, as you landed in the accounting department at Minot State. Obviously, getting your career going, getting things, you know, set up for future endeavors and getting everything set up for life. Not on the bucket list when you graduated, I'm pretty sure. So how did you get into coaching the women's team? Like, that just sort of started out of nowhere.
The way it worked, I think, was, you know, after I was done playing my 4 years, you know, that final year, we had a tough out in the national championships. I think my final year, I think we got bumped in the quarterfinals. It was a tough feeling and, you know, wasn't ready to give up the game yet. So I just was trying to figure out what the best option for me was to stay in the game. And you know, I don't mind coaching youth. I enjoy it, but, you know, I'll do skills and, you know, camps and stuff, whatnot, but I didn't see myself coaching a youth team. So at the time, the women's program was fairly new, very raw, not a lot of things going on with them. And one of my former teammates had stuck around and done the same thing I ended up doing and started coaching the women's team. So my first year, after being done hockey, I asked if I could be his assistant coach, and he said, yeah, sure, because we were a program that probably no one ever heard of and no one really knew about. So, you know, I came on to a team with 9 skaters and a goalie, and, you know, we were playing ACHA Division II at the time, and there was a lot of things that needed to be done that in these short 5 years that I've been with the program, I mean, and we'll probably get into that later, but just, you know, going from where I started and just coaching for fun with my buddy, enjoying the time, kind of getting to know, you know, being part of Minot State, staying with the university was definitely the right choice for me. And so halfway through that first season, the current head coach at the time was actually part of the Air Force and was getting deployed. So he unfortunately had to step down, and you know, me being the only other coach with the program midway through the season, didn't really have a choice, so I kind of got thrown into that position. I mean, I'm happy I did. I'm lucky I did, because you don't see many people at my age head coaching at the college level. So at the end of my first year, we went to the national championships, lost in the finals. And that following year, you know, we were still a club sport at the time. The school was like, do you want to stick around? We can offer you a stipend and you can do some accounting work for the university. So I was like, you know, I enjoyed my time here. There's lots of time and room to grow with this program. So I made that choice to stick around, and now it's where it is at. And from where it started, it's definitely a complete 360 and definitely changed for the best. So
obviously, I know one of the big challenges you just mentioned was when you started, there's, you know, 9 skaters, like not a big team, but what was the biggest challenge that you like discovered when you started coaching the women's team? Because I know we always talk about men's hockey, women's hockey. They are kind of completely different games. So, I mean, obviously you've never played the women's game. So what would you say the biggest challenge that you kind of had to work through when you started there was?
The biggest challenge, I think, in the beginning was learning how to coach on the female side of it. I grew up with coaches who yelled and screamed. And in my first couple of years, I obviously, being new to the program, I had to kind of read the ice, read the locker room, kind of understand what type of coach I wanted to be, and figure out the best way that I was going to gain the respect and earn the attention of the players that were sitting in front of me, listening to me. So just kind of getting my foot underneath me in terms of what coaching style I wanted to move forward with, and the best way to get the most out of the players that I had, you know, a small roster, Most of them were out there every other shift. He had to find ways to motivate them. And being fairly new to coaching, I mean, I had coached goalies my whole life in terms through juniors and through college and, you know, and coach youth through college. And so, but I hadn't really figured out how to or got to that level yet of coaching, you know, at the college level, even being at the ACHA Division II. So I think just finding my coaching rhythm, finding my style, and then, you know, being an accounting major, you know, there was virtually no budget with the program. The players were paying fees at the time. They were doing fundraisers. They were raising all their own money. So, you know, one of my biggest successes is building the program on the operations side, going from basically virtually $0 budget to what it is at now. So,
I mean, obviously things have gotten better, but 2021, 2022 will mark your fifth year behind the bench with the women's program, you know, all things considered with last season and everything went on there. But like I said, everything seemingly has gotten better since you took over, Ryan. Consider these numbers again. 75-13-2 as a head coach. You have two ACHA national championship final appearances. You were poised to make a third appearance, it seemed, before COVID struck last year. Everything seems to have gone exceedingly well since you took over the program. So, I mean, outside of COVID, is there one thing or is there something that you know of that you might have done differently knowing what you know now?
No, honestly, I think that first year was a real test of whether I was going to stick it out or not. And we made it to that final game and lost, and it was a tough feeling, just like as a player, you know, you never want to feel like that. And so I felt like I owed it to the team to continue building, and that's kind of where we went. I mean, if that makes sense.
Obviously, you know, COVID played a huge role in preventing a lot of girls from being scouted. And obviously your team has a handful of Canadians where not only was the border closed this year, but very little hockey was played for the girls last year. We know there are a number of Manitobans joining your program this year. I think goaltender Morgan Baker. But how do you scout and recruit players when there's, you know, very little information to use, considering, you know, no games, border closed, you can't really watch anyone. So what was scouting like the last year?
Yeah, so the nice part is, you know, we have six coming in this year, three from Manitoba, one from Alberta, and then two Americans. The nice part was that three out of the four Canadians that we recruited, you know, I had been watching for the last 2-3 years. So I kind of had an idea of what type of player they were going to be coming into their freshman year. Unfortunately, last year, they weren't able to play. You know, they got a couple of games in here or there, but they were already on my radar, you know, before COVID hit. So there were conversations had, and, you know, all you could really do as a coach recruiting them was hope that they would play. But at the same time, everyone was in the same situation. So that wasn't really going to hold me back from not recruiting them and not signing those players. So, I mean, a lot of the conversations obviously were over the phone. A lot of them were on Zoom with them and their parents and constantly asking questions. And, you know, one of my biggest things as a coach is I always want to make sure that I can get my players on campus before they commit. And with my four Canadians, three out of my four, I was able to get one down before COVID, but they weren't able to come down and see campus. So, I mean, I was making videos, FaceTiming them, walking around campus, showing them the dorms, showing them the facilities, trying to do as much as I could virtually so that they somewhat felt what it was like to experience being on campus. And obviously it worked because at the end of the day, they made the decision to come here. But the nice part is, you know, now come, you know, we're starting our 2022 class. We don't need as many as we do needed this year. So, but at the same time, you know, the players that we've identified, we'll be able to go back up to Canada and actually be able to watch them in person. And I think as a coach, that's the biggest thing. I mean, players can send hours of film and, you know, we'll watch it, we'll break it down, you know, we'll see it, but it's not the same feeling and same perspective as seeing them in person compared to on a screen. So.
I mean, the 2021 team that you put together, Ryan, had 10 Manitobans on them, along with a handful of players trained at Manitoba-based AAA programs, which is great. But there were four North Dakotans who played on the team last year. I'm not trying to compare them in any way, so don't think this is an apples-to-apples sort of thing. But with the loss of UND in the state, obviously things change and the landscape changes with that loss. But do you feel that Minot State can sort of be that school that can fill that void as an option for North Dakota-born girls who want to play high-level hockey in their home state? Because, outside of, you know, Minnesota and a few other, you know, smaller NCAA-level schools, it seems like the NCAA, you know, Division III and the ACHA are getting better every year. So is that maybe sort of a goal of yours, is to try and sort of fill that void that might be there?
Yeah, I think it always was. I mean, obviously, as a coach, you know, you want to be that premier team in North Dakota. I really didn't have that feeling until we made that jump from Division II to Division I, you know, because there are other ACHA Division II teams within the state. But when we made that jump to ACHA Division I 3 years ago, we're now the only team in North Dakota at that level on the women's side. So with that jump and that said, you know, obviously the last in my coaching career, I've either gotten second or third at the national tournament. I'm tired of losing. I need to win one here. Otherwise I'm going to go crazy. But, I think our success over the last couple of years, especially, you know, coming out our first year into ACHA Division I and going into the national tournament before it got canceled as the number two team as a first-year team definitely sparked some eyes. You know, we were able to crack into the local pool. We were able to finally crack into Bismarck, you know, and surrounding area. Right now, we're still kind of fighting with the east side of the state. You know, we have players. We just finally got our first player from Grand Forks, which we've never had a player from there before. And still working on Fargo. The only issue is Concordia Moorhead is basically virtually Fargo. It's right across the river, but right, the cities are attached. So a lot of those top players from the east side of the state still have that mentality that NCAA D3 is stronger than ACHA. And for the most part, you know, it's apples to apples. I mean, the top teams in ACHA are going to compete with the top teams in NCAA D3. But luckily enough, this year on our schedule, we haven't released it yet, but we do have a series scheduled against Concordia Moorhead. You know, so I'm really looking forward to those games because it'll kind of be, not only will it kind of determine where our program at and where their program's at, but it'll kind of put into perspective of how similar competition levels are between the top teams in ACHA Division I and NCAA Division III. So
obviously, yeah, you guys have a great team. You guys, our Beavers were ranked number two in the nation before COVID shut everything down last season. Cutting short what looked like, you know, a promising season for you and the team. What's the message to the team this year as you guys, you know, start getting back to the arena, getting ready to, you know, start playing again? Is there like a message you have to the team, or does that message maybe change knowing how quickly things can be taken away since, you know, COVID ended your season that was pretty promising?
Yeah, you know, I mean, last year we were fortunate that we got to play most of the season and we actually hosted nationals in Minot. So it was with all the restrictions and the testing, you know, we were able to get through the season. I mean, last year, you know, we went into the season with the mentality that we were the top team and we were going to win every game. We didn't. You know, we lost some games that we shouldn't have. And, you know, this year I think kind of changing that mentality is that we got to earn every game. I mean, we kind of went into last season knowing that we were going to be a top two team, and we were, but we dropped some games that we should have won, and it kind of cost us. You know, in the national tournament, we lost in the semifinals. And, you know, this year we will still probably be a top three team, but there's a lot of teams are also getting better, and we gotta just earn each game individually, and you know, before we're getting to that national tournament. So
on a personal note, Ryan, you managed to accomplish some stuff which gained you a little bit of the spotlight in North Dakota. In 2018, for example, you were nominated as a finalist for the non-school coach of the year by North Dakota Associated Press, Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association. A couple of questions on this one. A, how does Minot State University count as a non-school? And B, I mean, how cool is it to be included with guys like Marty Murray and Kerry Eads, who, I mean, they've got their own impressive credentials that they have in hockey.
Yeah, no. So to kind of answer your question, at the time when I was nominated for that, we were still considered a club sport.
Okay.
We were a student organization on campus. We only actually joined our athletic department 2 years ago.
Okay.
So we're going on year three with the department. So at the time when I got nominated for that, it was an honor, and just because I was basically in charge of everything with that program. Now, I mean, now I'm still the bench boss and I still have duties on the operations sides of the program, but I now have bosses above me and I have people doing things for me that I had to do to grow the program originally. So.
So another award, 2020, you were named the Young Alumnus Award winner from Dakota College at Bottineau after helping Dakota College get their women's hockey program off the ground. Obviously, that's a huge accomplishment, but how proud are you of that award and that accomplishment?
Yeah, I think that's huge. You know, that being where that's everything started for me, you know, I had a lot of success there. I think I really made an impact personally in the community and people recognize me. I still go back there sometimes and I still know everyone and they know me. So when I came to Minot, I stayed in contact with a lot of people there. And as I was growing my program, you know, last year or 2 years ago, their AD, who was my assistant coach, reached out and said, hey, got questions. I mean, I know you don't want to come here and rebuild a program or start over and build a program, but can you at least help us, you know, put us in the right direction, I guess. So I didn't do too much, but I was able to point their staff in the right direction and make sure that, you know, they were hiring the right coach, they had the proper budget, they were who to schedule with. I mean, we started out as in D2, so I was able to send all those contacts to them. And, you know, just, you know, you want to make sure that you have competition in your area so that you don't have to travel as far as we do now. So it was definitely a good feeling to receive that award. And, you know, at the same time, as much as it was nice athletically, I think, you know, academically too, I was always a good student. So the recognition was nice. And it was just good, especially during COVID, to have some positive from that. So
speaking of being a good student, this is pretty relevant, I would think. May 12th of this past year, you graduated again. You graduated from Minot State, but this time with a master's degree in sports management. So congratulations on earning that degree, Ryan, because that's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
Does this mean we're gonna hear about Ryan Minor maybe running an NHL team one day or
Yeah, you know, when I became a full-time employee 3 years ago, I'm lucky enough that the university institution pays for so many classes per year. So I thought, you know what, if I'm going to get free schooling, I might as well take my master's. And it worked out that they offered a sports management degree. You know, at the end of the day, future plans for me, I think, is kind of what you were pointing at, is eventually down the road, I'll probably want to switch to the men's side. I still think I'm not old enough to switch over kind of the men's side, especially at the college level. I mean, one of my close friends just graduated from the men's team, and he's my age, and I'm the same age as him, 5 years into coaching, you know. So eventually switch to the men's side of things, but down the road, wherever hockey takes me, you know, I think I'll eventually would like to switch to the operations side of things. You know, starting out, you know, you could GM of a junior A program, work your way up. I mean, you don't really have GMs at the college level. I mean, there's directors of hockey operations, but that title is more so just someone doing the budgets and the scheduling and stuff like that. So, but I think I was always a numbers guy, you know. I mean, I got my degree in accounting and my sports management degree, and I like dealing with numbers, budgets, operations, you know. I'm intrigued, you know, with the drafting and the recruiting and whatnot, all those types of things. So down the road, whenever it may be, I still have quite a bit of time here at Minot. You know, we haven't won a championship yet and still got to win that one here, but eventually switching over to some type of operations position, whether it's GM or director of hockey operations, something like that. So,
I got to say, we're looking forward to all the success that you're going to have this year, obviously, with a great team again at Minot State. But we've got a few fun questions. We've got about 6 or 7 minutes left here, Ryan. So do you want to have a few softball questions thrown your way? Some questions you can laugh at and maybe play around a bit with?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, let's have some laughs here. First question, not really a laugher one, but you were 31 in college during your playing days, at least with Botno. Is there any significance to the number? Did you wear any other numbers as well that had significance?
So I was 31 for both Botno and Minot. I've always been a Carey Price fan.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I mean, growing up, he was kind of the one that I idolized and tried to play my game around him, and that's just kind of where I ended up, so.
Carey Price, we love him on this show.
We do.
So both times you went to the ACHA final, you lost to a Canadian team, Lakehead University in Thunder Bay. That was 2017-2018. And then Assiniboine College in 2018-2019. Is there a little bit of, you know, a Canada-US rivalry between the handful of Canadian teams that play in the ACHA?
Yeah, you know, I think maybe not now for our program, but back then, the best players are, I still believe, coming from Canada, and, you know, it shows it on our roster, and those schools were lucky enough to get into our league and be able to play all these American teams, and, you know, being a Canadian, I think, you know, Canada's got the best hockey in the world, so best players in the world, so, I mean, even at that level, they were able to build rosters with kind of in the same way I did, and just, you know, sometimes it's a little tough. I mean, even though I'm Canadian, you know, coaching an American team and a Canadian team comes in and wins the championship, that's a little hard to swallow sometimes, but you still have a good laugh about it, so.
We've seen Minot State represented at the Female World Sports School Challenge here in Winnipeg a few times, coaches and scouts up here, I believe, including yourself, Ryan. How vital has that tournament been, though, for finding talent for your program?
Yeah, no, most definitely, you know, being able to see some of those teams, you know, in the CSSHL and even making my way to a couple of the U18 AAA games has been huge. I've really had grown my relationship with RHA and Pilot Mound, so usually have a couple players coming from each from either one of those programs each year, but then at the same time, you know, being from Winnipeg, I'm able to go home and visit family while also doing my job. So it means I don't have to stay in a hotel. I don't have to travel too far. So it's definitely a spoil for me to be able to come home and do what I love to do, but also visit with family and whatnot. So
Before you go on there, Jenna, don't be afraid to come over to the radio table next year if you're there, Ryan, because that's where we usually sit because we broadcast all those games. So
yeah, not most definitely.
Hop over. We'll get you on the radio again.
Yeah.
Not to stir up, you know, anything at all, but which ACHA team would you say is your biggest rival coming into this season?
It's always, you know, until we beat them, it's always going to be Liberty University. Our first year, yeah, we lost them in the conference finals with 17 seconds left. And then last year, we lost them in the conference finals in double OT. And then they have won the national tournament 3 years in a row. So we have beaten every top program at the Division I level except Liberty. I mean, we've only played them 3 times so far. But so, I mean, the rivalry isn't big, but it's growing. But, you know, there's always going to kind of be a chip on my shoulder until we get that first win against them.
Got a couple of minutes left here. I'm going to ask you one sort of last fun question because he kind of called you out a little bit on social media. Kyle Volkerson put up a funny picture about you not being able to stop anything. Do you want to say a few words about Kyle and make him a little famous?
Yeah. So Kyle and I have been best friends since we started college. We played at Botno together. We played at Minot together. The Swiss cheese joke comes to mind with that photo. He's had that thing, I think, for 5 years now. He likes to hold on to it, and every year at the perfect moment, he finds the right time to post it. And I guess this was the time, but he knows I look good in that photo, and he just made it look better. So he's just, I think he enjoys it more than I do, but it's always a good laugh. I mean, when I saw that, I just started cracking up, and I know I'll see it again next year. So
I mean, I gotta say, I had a good laugh at it as well, because I was like, I never expected that, but that's awesome. Always ask this of our guests. It'll be your last question, Ryan, as we let you get out of here, after taking up an hour of your time. But we always ask this, and we always think it's important, because it's always good advice from people who have either been in the game or played the game at a high level. So what's the best advice you can give to players who are looking to play at the post-secondary level with a program like the Minot State Beavers?
Yeah, no, I think... For future players, especially, you know, for coming from a coach's standpoint, look, when you're looking for a program, don't look at all the pretty things that are thrown in front of you. You got to make sure that, first of all, the academics fits, because that's the most important thing at the college level. Got to make sure your program's offered. You got to make sure that where you're going is... whether you can want to be close to home or far away from home, you got to look at proximity, location, and then cost. I mean, I was fortunate enough to go to a school that cost $8,000 a year. And in the United States, that's where the third most affordable in the United States, but that put me at a lot less debt than a lot of my friends that chose to go D1, D3 and play. And coming out of there, if they weren't on scholarship, with $50,000-$60,000 of debt. So kind of going back to it, with playing, you have to be eligible. So making sure that you know that you're going to a program that puts their academics first and foremost, and then obviously competes at a strong level. So again, I'll just say, you know, making sure that you pick the right school.
Yeah, I agree. It's a lot more to it than just, you know, the little things that you think about. But, I mean, I think we're just about out of time. So, you know, thanks for coming on the show, you know, letting us take up some of your time and, you know, letting us get to know you a little bit more. So thank you again.
Yeah, no, for sure. I appreciate both of you having me on here. So
yeah, we look forward to seeing how well you guys do again this year, Ryan, and we'll certainly keep an eye on the program as it moves forward. And hey, if there's a chance, maybe we can get down and catch a game, you know, live and in person this year. So thanks again, Ryan. We really appreciate you doing this and certainly getting to know you a little bit. And we'll, like I said, we'll keep an eye on what's going on with Minot State and how well you guys do this year for sure.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So there's Ryan Miner, head coach of the Minot State University Beavers women's hockey program. Glad to have had him on the show tonight. Glad to have talked to him about everything that's going on as well, because, I mean, that's an incredible program that he's got started down there. And you think about what he's done in 4 years, two national championship finals appearances. You know, he's got that incredible record that has like an 800 winning percentage. Like, he's doing incredible things down there. So we were happy to have him on and certainly to meet him. And we'll keep an eye on what happens with Minot State next year. That, folks, we're out of here for another week. Thanks for tuning into the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. Stay tuned. Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next. Always a good show there. You've been listening to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. Thanks for tuning in. See you next Thursday, everybody. You. Gotta relax.
This is Earth Radio. And now here's human music.
Human music. I like it.
Human music heard live on CJUM 101.5 in Winnipeg.